All right, okay. Hey, levels look good. Levels look good. They're even, they're crisp, they're solid, they're smooth. There it is. Levels looking good on the audio track. I'm back on the mic with the big ball sack, living in a mansion apartment, a house or a shack. M-A-S-H would be mansion apartment shack house, but that didn't rhyme. Do you remember that game as a kid? Mansion, apartment, shack, house. You would pick, who's your future wife? Give me five choices. What's your future car? Give me five choices. Future city you want to live in? Give me five choices. What was the other one? Who you want to marry? Where you want to live? Type of car? Oh, and job. And future career? Give me five choices. And then tell me when to stop. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Stop. Okay, so stop at 8, and every 8th, I'm going to cross one off the list. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Cross off astronaut. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Cross off Janet Jackson. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Cross off apartment. I'm saying things that only a percentage of you understand. Mansion, apartment, shack, house. But I tried to rhyme with shack, and it didn't work, so I guess I just got to continue. But audio track, ball sack, shack, don't give me any flack for perusing Facebook Marketplace to buy a new gun rack. Okay. Hanging things on my classroom wall with a tack. Am I done? Am I fading? Can I rhyme anymore? I bet I could, but there's pressure to continue the show. Continue the episode, sir, but you gotta rhyme one more time. And you already used ball sack. Today, I texted with my old friend, Zach. And that's true. I actually want to read his text because I was saying, I gotta find out the scientific reasoning behind why Wim Hof breathing works. I do this Wim Hof breathing every single day, a lot of the time with my wife. So I'm not just the crazy guy on the couch. I got my crazy wife with me on the couch. I shouldn't call her crazy. She's not crazy. But to do this type of breathing with me, if you saw us doing it, we look crazy. For 10 minutes a night, we sit there, we go to YouTube, and we bring up the same video every night. 10 minutes of Wim Hof breathing, and I feel so good afterwards. It's like that quick euphoria, and I don't understand what's happening. So I was texting my friend Zach, who was a doctor, and he explained to me his idea. Where's my phone? Hold on. I should read a text from Zach because that'll finish out the rhyme. He said, I wonder if it's a slight hormonal bump in some of the adrenaline stress hormones that come with a little dopamine that feels so good and a little effect almost like microdosing of a slightly altered state that brightens perception of reality. Has a small shift in some of the routine default networks we all fall so deeply into. I have become a big believer in the sum of small changes like those summing up to daily happiness, exercise, meditation, sleep, good eating, and now this breathing. When I do these things, I feel good, and when I don't, I don't. I know it's obvious, but it's a direct impact on my days. Basically, when I was younger, days just felt good, and nowadays it takes more work. How true, Dr. Zach, how true. I've read other things about the Wim Hof breathing, like why does it work? I've done it for 3 months. I haven't really gotten sick. I'm sleeping a little bit better, in a better mood, and I don't understand why. A little hyperventilation, hold your breath. Hyperventilation, hold your breath. Hold it, retain that breath, and exhale. All with his voice, with his Dutch accent, just making me feel oh so damn good. And let me check in with you too. Are you feeling good right now? Late April, the sun is coming out, at least in most parts of our planet. I don't know if that's true or not. I haven't checked the weather in many parts of the planet, but in many parts of California, the sun is coming out. You feeling good? I say, we're on an upswing, folks. Let's do it.
You know, instead of waiting for a good day to happen, you know, waiting around the ups and downs, you know, I just said, look.
Yes, 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 a little nappy roots. Good day with the piano intro. So damn good. The art of feeling good, right? You don't clamor onto it. You don't sink your talons into it and say, stay, stay, stay. You know it's fleeting. Because it's temporary, you just ride the waves. You ride the waves and you know it's temporary. Something sad might be around the corner. An injury might be around the corner. Something annoying might be around the corner. But when you're in a moment, you know those moments? You're like, whoa, out of nowhere. I didn't expect it. Hey, Wednesday evening, feeling good. Ugh. Hold on. Shit, I hear the baby on the monitor. Or I hear, is that the six-year-old on the monitor? Either way, I'm completely distracted all of a sudden, and I'm not feeling so good anymore. Oh, that was a quick transition, folks. Even earlier tonight, I thought I was floating. I finally discovered Wordle, late to the party. I know, late to the party. But Wordle, New York Times, little word puzzle, or whatever it is, like for the can you solve it in six tries type of thing. So tonight I was like, hey, let's play to my wife. Hey, let's do it. And I got it in four and she got it in two. And instead of celebrating her, I was suspicious. I was like, what? Did you Google it? Who gets it in two? She wrote the word stare, S-T-A-R-E, to start. Everyone has a starter word, okay? Everyone has their own starter word. And then she just wrote overt after that. And she tried to explain her logic, but still, I was like, what? You just picked overt? I don't buy it, but I had to swallow that and just be like, okay, nice job. Okay, good. She's going to stomp me in Wordle like she stomped me in Words with Friends, and I got to find a bunch of fun stuff away from social media to do. So I'm a Wordleist nowadays. It's true. You got to find things because we're all going to be addicted to these devices. Let's just accept that. I got my screen time down to less than 3 hours a day. I'm averaging less than 3 hours a day. So that's pretty good. It's, you know, like we all have an ideal weight. I think that's my ideal screen time average, about 2 hours and 45 minutes. I'll take that. If I'm above 3 hours, I feel like a total failure. If I'm less than 3 hours a day, hey, we could celebrate. Now I'm thinking, what else could I do? If I'm going to hold on to this, I think I'm addicting to texting. Addicting? I think I'm addicted with an ED, you fool. Addicted to texting. I just text and I text. And I text people who I want to be in touch with, not necessarily people that I want to see all the time. That's weird, huh? I love being in touch with friends. But if any friend were to like respond, hey, do you want to get together? I'd be like, no, what? Of course not. We're texting. Just keep texting. Stop acting like I'm reaching out to get together. We're just texting. Jesus. Anywho, the other thing I do is Immaculate Grid. Sports fans, where you at? Immaculate Grid. Just go to immaculategrid.com, enter promo code Josh Rosenberg, and they'll give you, no, it's free. You just go and you just try to piece together. Okay, that guy played on that team, and that guy had 20 home runs, and he played for that team. You'll see what I mean. They have football, basketball, baseball, all sorts of good stuff. And it's not social media. And you feel productive and you feel dumb at the same time. You're like, what am I, a monkey? What am I, an ape just tapping this website? The Kirby Puckett played for the Twins. The Bob Hamlin played for the Royals. Boo. Jack Sikma played for the Bucks and the Sonics, so I got him on my grid. Okay, I got Del Curry played for the Hornets and the Jazz. I got him on my grid. I'm not going to explain it, but you could play it if you want. You can do it, sports fans. Actually, let me rewind for a second. When I say I'm feeling good, it's true for the most part, at least within this family dynamic. It's good. That intensifies. You have little kids, you watch them grow. That's like real joy, like pure joy. The connection with kids, being comfortable in your home, feeling safe. All right, so that's good. But I have to admit, there are times, I want to know if anybody else can feel me on this. Just random spurts of boredom in moments that are not that boring. I don't know if it's our senses just dull a little bit as we age. I think that's it. You know, I have a career that I enjoy, but there's a few moments throughout the day just going through the motions of life, whether it's at work or just something mundane like I'm getting gasoline or I'm brushing my teeth again. And we've done so many things again and again and again. And repeat and do it and repeat. There's a lot of things we do that are becoming boring as fuck. And I'm starting to notice that boredom can plague me from time to time. Yet, I don't feel like my life is boring at all. And I'm wondering if this is just part of the aging process. Like someone in their 80s right now, are they still blown away by movies and shows and walks by a lake and ballpark nachos and petting a dog? If you're 84 years old and you've gone through all of these motions of life, some good, some bad, just some vegetable lasagna right in the middle, do we atrophy to the point where it's just like there's a lot of boredom? Boredom is not sadness. Boredom is not depression. It's just like, ugh. And you almost feel guilty because you know it's a gift to be alive. Then you shake it and you do something that's less boring. If you can, write a list of things that you enjoy doing. I mean, thank God for YouTube, right? Why am I thanking God for YouTube? Thank the dorks in Silicon Valley for YouTube. Because then you just type in anything. Like I typed in the history of the Oakland Coliseum and I wasn't bored anymore. I was just watching the construction, like when it was built. It was so innovative. The ingenuity that went into the Oakland Coliseum where the Raiders would soon play and the A's were coming to play. It was like a beautiful venue. And now it's just dog shit. It's concrete dog shit. What a dump. What a disaster. Oakland professional sports. And someone just made an 8-minute YouTube video. Just some random dude. It wasn't even like a journalist. It wasn't professional. He probably just on his iPhone knew how to edit together some photos. And he did his own voiceover. And I was like, this is enthralling. I don't know why. Stadium history, it's enthralling to me. And it's so sad that the A's are going to play in a little minor league stadium. So it's official. I'm an A's fan. All right, I'm out of the closet. I'm letting people know I'm an A's fan. Their last year in Oakland, I am a ride or die A's fan. I'm actually watching games. I'm checking box scores. I'm learning players' names. I'm going to go attend some games this summer. I really am. I'm going to sit front row for $3, or I'll just buy a $3 ticket and walk past the usher. And if they stop me, I'll go, what the fuck? What are you doing? Let me sit wherever I want to sit. The ushers at A's games? Are they really checking tickets? Bruce Jenkins wrote the greatest column. Yeah, I'm a subscriber to the Chronicle. Longtime columnist, Bruce Jenkins. He wrote such a good column about when he was a young reporter going to Cal Berkeley, and he was sent over to the Coliseum to cover the A's in the 60s, in his memories of American League Baseball. He like painted a beautiful picture of how great that place was. And then you think of Candlestick. That was the dump. Candlestick was the dump. Going to a Giants game was a grueling trek out to the windy mess. But going to an A's game before Mount Davis, it was like a beautiful sight. The Oakland Hills. And God, has that changed. Going to a Giants game, my wife and I went to a Giants game a week or two ago. It was amazing. It's a constant party. 81 home games, they have 81 giant parties. Somewhat kid-friendly, somewhat bachelor party craziness. I like the pitch clock. The game was done in like 2 hours and 5 minutes. Have I talked about this already? That's the problem. 235 episodes. I don't know what I've talked about. I don't remember. But the difference is simple. Giants games are for people that don't even care about baseball. They're going to have fun. They're going to have a lot of fun. A's games, if you don't care about baseball, that's going to be a miserable night of your life. If you don't care and enjoy the sport of baseball and someone drags you to an A's game, that's not a friend of yours. That's a small form of torture to sit and watch an A's game at the Coliseum. Oh boy. Where the real plot of Major League is playing out, an owner trying to lose. That's craziness, folks. You know what else is craziness? There's still zookeepers. You think that's just a role in a children's book? You think that's just a job in a children's book, right? Zookeepers. How you teach kids about elephants and monkeys and giraffes and zebras and bears. Nope. Once again, my Sunday Chronicle subscription, I read a 4-page expose on how zookeepers don't feel so safe at the San Francisco Zoo. There was a story of a zookeeper running full speed from a grizzly bear around a grotto. Holy shit, what do you do? What? It's not, you don't have this down yet? How the doors work? I kept reading and reading and reading. I was like sweating paragraph after paragraph. And then the zookeeper zigged and zagged and ran behind a door and then a gate. And then the grizzly was chasing in hot pursuit. Then the next paragraph was like, and then a penguin had his head sliced off by a guillotine door. And I was like, shit. And then they're like, and then once a lion and a tiger got loose and killed some people at the zoo. I'm like, okay, first of all, I'm never going back. Okay. And second of all, a zookeeper as a job? Of course you're getting chased by grizzlies. Don't get too close. What are we still doing with zoos? I know some people could say, well, it's good for the animals. Conservationalism, or that word. I know some people could probably like debate me on this. But zoos, we're just caging up animals. And occasionally they get loose. That's wild. That's wild, my child. And now the zookeepers are sounding off. But a lot of them are doing anonymous interviews. Like a former zookeeper who still wants to be anonymous. Who are you scared of? The bear community? You could tell us what happened in there. What happened in the lion's den? So many anonymous quotes. And another zookeeper who wished to remain anonymous told the Chronicle that it was freaky every day to be around a gorilla. Yeah. You go to work with a gorilla every day? That's freaky shit. And all the former zookeepers had said, like, from 2017 to 2018, or, like, from 2020 to 2021. Like, it was never that long of a span of being a zookeeper. I think some people wake up in the morning. If you're a zookeeper, you probably wake up in the morning at some point in your life and you go, fuck no more. I'm good. I'm just going to work at Office Depot. I don't like to run from the grizzlies. That rant is weak. I don't know. I don't have bullet points tonight. Yeah, I should just tap into my brain. What was I doing today? I got to the Y, and I love it. And I love how there's more signage up in the sauna now. Because those old naked men with those old saggy nuts, they love to talk, and they love to talk. So I immediately walk in with my eyes closed, and I sit upright, good posture. I close my eyes, and I count my breaths, a form of meditation. Also, like a form of deflecting any socializing. Like, no, your words will not penetrate. I also heard the grossest sound I've ever heard in the sauna. An old man with silver chest hair, like matted picture steel wool chest hair, silver chest hair, sweating. He's been in there for 3 hours and scratching it with his long fingernails. Old man, steel wool, silver chest hair, just scratching himself. Scratch. Scratch. Sorry, I'm coughing. That didn't go along with the sound effects I'm aiming, just scratching his silver matted chest hair. And I'm supposed to relax in here? And they finally put up some signs in the sauna. One of them is just quiet, please, with a logo of, you know, a finger over a mouth, like, shh, shut the fuck up, Harvey. No one cares that it rained all weekend and you had to get an umbrella on your trip to Safeway to buy your Metamucil. Put a lid on it. And then another one says, stop hanging your towels on the sauna. Old men are hanging their towels on the sauna. And some of them put a leg up on the sauna wood and start drying themselves and stretching. And I don't look, but I know it's happening. You know, my peripheral vision understands what's going on. I go, you got to stop that. You got to stop that. This is not a good experience for me. It's never a good experience. And the other sign was like, stop pouring water on it. Like for the old guys who are trying to make it hotter. Oh, they're trying to challenge themselves. They're real thrill seekers. So they think pouring water on the hot sauna rocks will make it hotter. But no, you're just going to break everything. You've already broken everything. In this locker room, you old naked men at the Y. The other day, I took my wife to the Y, got her a day pass. And they said, actually, pool's closed today. Hot tub's closed. So you could keep that day pass. It was nice. Nice gesture at the front desk. They said, you can still come in and work out. My wife, who's not a member like me, come on, they don't just let anyone in. But they said, you keep that day pass. And I said, why is the pool closed? And the guy said, someone went to the bathroom in the pool. I swear to God, he said that. Someone went to the bathroom in the pool. I love the way he worded that. He wasn't about to just say, like, someone took a shit in the pool, because that would make us go, what? Ew. And even if he said someone defecated or someone pooped in the pool, we probably would have been like, ugh. But when you say someone went to the bathroom in the pool, it just sounded silly and fun and funny, and I loved it. And I didn't even see him grin. Like, he didn't even catch how funny that was. We say went to the bathroom. A bodily function is not going to the bathroom. Going to the bathroom is going to the bathroom. A bodily function? We've turned into going to the bathroom? Here's the weirdest part. Oh, God. What am I, early Seinfeld? There's no bath. Most of us who say, can I go to the bathroom? Why are we still calling it that? And some people say restroom. And you're not going in there to rest either. You're not going in there to take a bath, and you're not going in there to rest. Oh, he's hot tonight, folks. I'm just writing as I go. Okay, some of it'll stick, some of it won't. By now, you've probably stopped listening. You're on to what? Bert Kreischer's podcast? Where you at? Neil Brennan? Where are you going? Andrew Huberman? Rogan? Where are you going after this? Or right now? Right now in this moment where you're like, oh, no, he's doing the go to the bathroom in the pool rant. Sheesh, Rosenberg. Come on. Bring that new stuff. Bring that new flavor. I got some new flavor today. I really do. You have to stay with me, though. This is an agreement. We work together, okay? I thought I was going somewhere with the zookeeper stuff. Still, I think that was okay, right? Like a B-minus rant. Then I got into the YMCA old man. Piqued your interest a little bit because you're like, really? An old man lifts a leg, puts it on the wood encampment that encloses the sauna rocks, and he stretches and he dries his inner nuts or inner thighs where his nuts clank around. Yes, all that. It's true. It's true. But you're hoping I get into something sophisticated? I will. Oh, boy. I will. Or at least I'll attempt, because here's one takeaway I just remembered. I didn't even know if I was going to record tonight. My mother-in-law has been in town for the last 10 days. Nice to have her. I haven't done a dish in 10 days. And that's not the biggest value to her being here. She visited from Fargo, North Dakota. It's the most low-maintenance house guest I've ever had. She doesn't ask for anything. And she does every dish for 10 days. And it's nice for the girls to have grandma around. Or Safta, as they call her. Wonderful visit. But I wasn't going to record. And when you don't record a podcast for a while, you start to get rusty. And then you're like, what are we going to talk about? And then you're like, who even cares about this anymore? Like, all things come to an end. At some point, this will end, right? At some point, everything will end. But I did remember one moment. That's when my wife and I were watching American Fiction. This is a really good movie. It's not great. I think it was nominated for Best Picture. I'm certain that the lead actor, Jeffrey Wright, was nominated for Best Actor. And it's a movie that has a lot of depth to it. Because there's a message, and it's kind of an uncomfortable message. I mean, you could just watch it and enjoy it and not analyze it. But I analyze. And I was thinking, the idea behind the movie, at least the way I saw it, feel free to disagree, we can talk, is that America, for a long time, has been very entertained by black pain. And it's sad to admit, but the movie captures that because Jeffrey Wright, who plays this character Monk, his name's Thelonious Monk, he's an author from an affluent background. But he sees that there are books, and one in particular that's really selling. It's becoming a bestseller. And his books aren't. His books are toiling around, and they're not selling. And this one book that's selling, it's just rugged, ghetto, hood language, from the streets, so urban. You know, all these terms that he's kind of disgusted with because he's like, enough is enough. And it's true. A lot of the movies that I grew up watching and enjoying, Boys in the Hood, Menace to Society, Juice, Sugar Hill, New Jack City. I mean, think about how a lot of us might have seen black culture on the silver screen in movies throughout the 80s and 90s. These films about ghetto life, they sold. They became big hits. Do the Right Thing, Spike Lee. And I'm not saying the alternative couldn't work. I mean, The Cosby Show, that was an affluent black family. And that was an amazing show, one of the greatest shows of all time. Even Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, an affluent black family. So you don't want to get the idea that it's only black pain from the hood that sells. But that's what this movie is about. So Jeffrey Wright gets so fed up with it. As a joke, to just mock that, he starts writing a fictional tale from the hood as if he himself is a gangster. And he's just writing. And it's a great scene. Actually, the cinematography as he's writing and the actors are portraying it right in front of him. It's one of the best scenes in the movie. And it's funny. It also, it's satire, it's parody, but it has a deep message as well. As you go, it's like a ride. This movie's a ride, especially the end, a choose-your-own-adventure ride that you don't really understand what's happening until the very, very end. But his idea is like, let me write a book so dumb, so stupid, just for fun. And he even calls it Fuck. That's the name of the book. He says, this book's going to be called Fuck. Like, of course it won't sell. It does. It becomes a bestseller. And he's embarrassed. He's almost humiliated to see the appetite for this book, the consumption, that white America is ready to read this book more than his other books. His other books that he worked hard on that reflected his humanity, his own genuine literary abilities, not this game he was playing just to try to write in another character's voice. But he's like, oh, this is what sells? And it goes back to stereotypes, how a lot of Americans, once they label a certain group a certain way, that is how they're going to be portrayed. Why? Because it sells. And we are in a society where everything comes down to money. Absolutely everything comes down to how much value, how much monetary value can be connected to that. And if it dries up, if the eyeballs aren't there anymore, if it's not getting the clicks, if the interest is not there, then it vanishes. But if it continues to get interest, then it almost doesn't matter. Morals aside, whatever sells, sells in the world of arts and entertainment and showbiz. And sometimes it's very detrimental to a group's progress. Like, think about any gay character in any show in the 80s and 90s. Very flamboyant, right? I think we all know. That doesn't represent all gay people. Of course not. But if there's a certain sliver of the gay population that acts that way, and it makes for a silly character in a silly movie, and people love it, then Hollywood's going to stay with it. Think about how many examples there are of that. A community profiled into one character in a show you used to watch or a movie that you remember. And if it worked, like Data and Goonies, Asian booby traps, then you're like, all right, they're going to keep playing the hits. They're going to keep going with that until it doesn't sell anymore. And then there has to be a bit of a revolution, like a small revolution of people in that community who are like, we don't really love being represented that way. Because even though it might be true for a segment of our population, that's not all of us. But how many people really have a chance to know all of them? Like if Jews are portrayed, I don't know, Jerry Lewis, Jews, ladies. The way Family Guy and The Simpsons have like their token Jewish character, very nerdy, very silly. Oh boy, I really shouldn't. You know, the jerky boys. Yeah, there are Jews like that. Absolutely. Not all. But that's funny. That works. All right, let's have a silly Jewish character. And a bunch of shows and movies. And if white suburbia is consuming books like Fuck and enjoying movies like Menace to Society, which is a lot of my friends in the mid-90s, we're definitely watching Menace to Society with Lorenz Tate. And it's exciting. And you feel like you're getting a glimpse into that community. Sure, entertainment is exactly what it is. If it entertains you, it's entertainment. And if it sells to the masses, that's probably a success for whether it's an author, a filmmaker, a screenwriter, a poet, a musician. You can play the hits. You can play the hits that get the clicks. But it does stunt the growth of certain communities, and it also keeps people in bubbles, and it also can create fear, because if you're not exposed to actually knowing the many different facets of a group of people of an ethnicity, then it's so easy to label them and put them into a box. It's too easy, and that's how the division of this country becomes so damn dangerous. Hate, in my opinion, is just based on, you know, you don't know people in that community, do you? You hate gay people? You probably never hung out with gay people. You hate black people? Have you ever really hung out with black people? You hate Jews? How many Jews have you hung out with? You hate Asian people? Go hang out with them. And then you'll see, oh, humanity. I think that's the big thing, is that nowadays it's all portrayed on screens and devices, and it makes it so easy to put it out there like you're the arbiter of morals, that this group's being mistreated and this group's the oppressor, and I stand with them, and I stand with them, and I clamor onto this group being oppressed. And now look at my social media posts. And this is who we need to point the finger at. And this is the problem, and that's the problem, and that's right. And everyone's just tapping devices, and no one's doing a damn thing about it except remaining in their own corner, remaining in their own isolated corner of the country. Are you done, pal? Yeah. So that's my review of American Fiction. If you see it, you might have a totally different takeaway. I don't know. But I do know that we're done. Because I got to wake up and teach about Reaganomics. We're getting to the end of the school year. We're into the 80s, folks. We're into budget cuts. We're into Mr. Gorbachev, take down that wall. We're into DARE, drug abuse resistance education. We're into the HIV AIDS crisis, the Reagan 80s. Hey, kids, buckle up. It's got to be quite a thrill ride. A former governor of California, not a big fan of abortion rights, labeled the Teflon president, launched an attack of Granada, also was a play-by-play guy for the Cubs in Iowa. How does that work? They said he was a baseball broadcaster for Cubs baseball out of Iowa. Oh, well, the Cubs didn't play there, so what was he doing? I don't know. Didn't he always look like a prune, Ronald Reagan? I mean, you could Google pictures of him young. You know those people who you're just like, they always have been old. Like, were they always just born? Or like Tommy Lee Jones, just always old. Who else? Steve Martin. Steve Martin, just to my head, always an old guy with white hair. Sinatra. Old. Who was I just talking about? Oh, yeah, Reagan. Holy shit. Oh, I'm tired. I forgot I was talking about Reagan. I was like, was I talking about Sinatra? Oh, the voice in my head that's like lost. He's like, where are you going? Sinatra? Should we talk Sinatra? Should we end it? Oh, fuck. All right. That'll do it for episode 235. I believe. Leave a nice rating. Let's have ourselves a cyber hug. I appreciate you tuning in. This one is in the books, folks. I'll talk to you soon.